if not more than, he is Ava's friend.
I suppose... I remember now when we set it up, there was something about this. It was supposed to stop the company passing out of control of the original shareholders without their agreement. I'm pretty sure that shareholders can't sell or give away their shares. They can only offer them for sale to Ava and me. I mean...
He stops. Swallows.
To me.
Liz. Snoop ID Anon 101. Listening to Offline. Snoop Scribers 0.
Ava is dead. I don't know how the word gets out, but once the whispers start, they are like frost creeping across a window. Soon everyone knows.
In the living room, Miranda and Tiger are exchanging urgent whispers.
I know,
I hear Miranda hiss.
But we have to figure out some kind of announcement for when we're back online, Tiger. There's no way we can keep a lid on news this big, and if it leaks, it'll be worse in the long run.
I can't believe it.
Annie comes to sit beside me on the couch.
Her face is swollen and blotched, even in the dim light from the stove and candles.
Have you heard?
I nod. I don't trust my voice. In spite of everything, in spite of all that's happened, and all the years since I left Snoop, my feelings are still too raw.
I can't believe it,
Annie repeats desperately.
Oh, God. This is awful. Poor, poor Ava. Rick says they may not even be able to recover a body.
Oh, God. Poor Arno. And he doesn't even know.
How will he tell Radisson? How do you explain to a child of that age that Mummy's never coming home?
Radisson. The name stabs me like a knife. I'd almost forgotten that Ava had had a child in the years since we worked together.
I don't know, I say hoarsely.
Fuck knows what this means for the buyout,
Carl says morosely from the other end of the room, and Annie rounds on him.
Carl, how can you even think about that?
I know,
Carl holds up his hands.
Look, I'm not being selfish here. I won't be getting any million-dollar payouts, will I? I'm not talking about the money, I'm talking about the safety of the company. I'm still chief legal officer at Snoop, and I have to think about this stuff. Snoop doesn't poof out of existence because Ava's had an accident. All our employees don't go away. I've got a duty to them and to the company. I'd be saying the same if it was me skied off a cliff. Well, I mean... assuming I could still talk. Carl's right.
Rick comes up behind us unexpectedly, looming out of the shadows, and puts his hand on his colleague's shoulder. His face in the candlelight looks uneasy.
However crassly he's phrased it, Ava's death is a tragedy. There's absolutely no doubt about that, but in the coldest possible way, it's got very little to do with Snoop. The company is a completely separate entity to any of us, even Ava and Topher. The buyout offer is still on the table. The clock's still ticking. We still have to come up with an answer. Ava's death doesn't change that.
Well, it does change one thing, doesn't it, mate?
Carl says. There is something in his voice I don't quite like. It's a kind of grimness. Rick looks puzzled.
Sorry, I'm not sure what you're getting at. Ava's shares, you mean? They'll go to her husband, I assume. Except they won't,
Carl says flatly.
What? I don't understand what you mean. Even if Ava's intestate, Arno would still stand to get everything. And he'll certainly want to accept the buyout now, won't he? Shareholders' agreement,
Carl says. When Rick still looks blank, he spells it out.
When the company was set up, there was a clause in the original paperwork to say that no one could pass their shares to an outsider. You're a shareholder, mate, didn't you know this? What?
Rick says, more forcefully.
No, I didn't know this. Why the fuck would anyone think that was a good idea? It's quite common,
Carl says, with a shrug.
In fact, I'd go as far as saying it's good practice. Stops the company passing into the hands of twats and plonkers. Means the original founders can't be forced out without their consent, that kind of thing. Topher and Ava set it up that way so this sort of thing couldn't happen. You know, if someone gets divorced and has to give up half their assets, you don't necessarily want their loony ex to have voting rights. So what the fuck are you saying?
Rick says. He looks horrified.
Ava's shares disappear on her death? Nah, they still exist. But Arno has to sell them to Topher. To Topher? Why not to the rest of us? Because this agreement predates you and Elliot coming on board,
Carl says shortly.
This is how they set it up back when it was just the two of them. It was never updated when they issued more shares.
So, Topher will have to buy out Arno,
Miranda says. She comes to sit beside Rick, her brow furrowed.
Except, well,
she stops significantly and exchanges a look with Rick.
Except he can't,
Rick says bluntly.
He doesn't have enough liquidity. I don't think that's any big secret, is it? So, what does that mean? There's an insurance policy to cover the cost. At least there should be, assuming they kept up the payments. They'll have to be independently valued, and Arno will get whatever the valuers thresh out. I imagine no idea how they'll take the buyout into consideration. That's for the insurers to decide, I suppose. So wait, what you're saying is...
Rick looks thunderstruck.
What you're telling me is Topher's voting share just got increased to 60%. Yep, that's about the size of it.
Carl agrees. There is deathly silence in the room. Miranda looks stricken. Rick turns and walks out the door. Erin. Snoop ID, Little My. Listening to, Offline. Snoop Scribers, 10. The news of Ava's death is like a pebble thrown into a pond.
No, not a pebble, a rock. First, there is the god-awful, bone-shaking impact, and then the ripples of reaction radiating out from that original catastrophe and then rebounding, interacting, magnifying and negating each other. As Danny and I serve out soup to the guests in the silent, candlelit dining room, I can't help watching them, the way they're trying to make sense of Ava's disappearance in their own individual ways. Some of them are in deep denial. Inigo, for instance, refuses to believe the GPS evidence. She could still be down in San Antoine, he keeps repeating. GPS is wrong all the time, and anyway, even if her phone is somewhere, what does that prove?
Some of them seem to have been struck dumb by the tragedy. Tiger hardly eats. She just sits, head bowed over her untouched soup, letting the noise of the group wash over her as if the others aren't even there. Some of them look stunned. Annie seems only half aware of what's going on. She crumbles her bread and makes inane remarks to no one in particular. Liz looks white and shocked and barely speaks. But some of them don't seem to be affected at all.
Elliot, for instance, is spooning his soup with a poker face and much gusto, as if the tragedy had never happened. His lack of reaction is almost disturbing, though when Annie bursts out, "Elliot, don't you care?" he looks genuinely surprised.
"Of course I care,"
he says.
"I still have to eat dinner."
It's Topher that my gaze keeps returning to. Topher, who has lost a partner and gained a company. For Snoop is now in Topher's complete control. That seems pretty clear. And for all his wild-eyed grief in the kitchen earlier, he doesn't seem that shaken by the news that he is now the majority shareholder in a billion-dollar company. In fact, he seems to have taken it in his stride, feeding on it, almost, as if his personality has expanded to fill the vacuum left by Ava's absence. As I clear the soup bowls and refill the wine glasses, at least wine doesn't need cooking or refrigeration, he picks up his glass and downs it, laughing wildly as he does. He has been drinking a lot, throwing back glass after glass as he regales the silent tiger with some tale of his and Ava's exploits when they first started the company. And the thing is, I can see it. I see the reason why they made this man CEO. I see the confidence that led him to think he could take a wild, improbable idea in a crowded market and make it into a billion-dollar proposition. Something I never quite understood before. How someone would have the chutzpah to do this, and all before their 30th birthday, is suddenly plain. Rick, on the other hand, seems to have shrunk. He looks bewildered, punch drunk, like a man who's lost everything, which, in a sense, I suppose he has. With Topher in charge, that billion-dollar buyout is melting away, leaving him with, what, shares in a company he tried to sell out from under the founder, a position under a leader he doesn't trust. I can't see him surviving much longer in his post when they get back to the UK, best friend or no best friend. Topher doesn't strike me as the kind of man who would forgive or forget the kind of coup Rick and Ava were attempting to pull. What's more impressive is that Carl and Miranda, who might easily have switched loyalties when they saw which way the wind was blowing, have instead both rallied around Rick. Do they really believe Snoop is doomed without Ava at the helm? Either way, they are not siding with Topher, that much is plain. Instead, they sit either side of Rick like chess pieces guarding their king. But it feels like the match is over. They have lost their queen. For once more, there is a space at the table, an empty place. Not Topher's this time, but Ava's. Her empty chair a constant, painful reminder of what has happened. Not letting anyone forget, even for a second, what has occurred. The chalet is still relatively warm, in spite of the power cut and the temperature drop outside. Its thermal insulation and triple glazing means that the heat from earlier in the day is still enough to make the bedrooms bearable, while the two log burners downstairs keep the living room and dining room toasty. Nevertheless, I distribute extra blankets and duvets before bed, limping from door to door with a torch clamped under my elbow, clutching armfuls of the spare bedding we keep for emergencies, along with thermos flasks of hot chocolate. I'm about to knock at the last door but one when Danny, trailing behind me with a stack of blankets, says,
"Erin, mate,"
with a warning note in his voice. And I stop. It's Ava's door. And somehow, that one simple thing catches me like a blow to the stomach. A reminder of the reality of what has happened here.
An avalanche. A death. Will Perse and Neige ever recover from these twin disasters? It's hard to imagine people reading news like this in their Sunday paper and then turning to book a holiday. But then Saint-Antoine isn't the first alpine resort to experience tragedy in the form of an avalanche. It happens almost every year. In fact, there was another similar fall just up the road earlier in the season.
Mate,
Danny says, and I realise I have stopped stock still, lost in thought. Sorry, I say, stupidly. I wasn't keeping track.
You all right?
Danny asks uneasily.
You should be sitting down. I'm not happy about you walking on that ankle.
I'm fine, I say shortly. The truth is that my ankle is hurting a lot. Danny's probably right, and I shouldn't be putting weight on it. But I can't bear to sit alone and silent in the darkness of the staff quarters, feeling it throb, thinking about what's happened and what's going to happen. I'm better off working. Somehow the endless tasks keep my thoughts at bay. Plus, more practically, guest interaction isn't Danny's strong suit. They've forgiven him for his tactlessness in the wake of the avalanche, at least I hope they have, but our roles are firmly back in place now. We're here to be polite, good hosts, even in these circumstances, perhaps especially in these circumstances. It feels like everything is crumbling, and our ordained roles are the only things we have left to hang on to. Danny and I must remain in charge. If we don't keep that authority, if we let Topher take over, well, I don't like to think about how the situation could play out. There's just one door left, Topher's, and I hitch my armful of blankets a little higher before I knock. He's drunk, I can tell that when the door opens. He's wearing a robe, open to the waist in spite of the cold, and holding a bottle. And he's not alone. With the overhead light out, I can't see who's inside, but I've got a horrible feeling it might be little Annie, who didn't answer her door when I knocked a few minutes ago. I want to tell her the answer to her distress over Ava doesn't lie in Topher's bed. But I can't. It's none of my business. She's the same age as me. She's a guest, not a friend, and I have no right to tell her what to do, even if I think she's making a fairly huge mistake.
Ellen, he slurs. Why, hello. What brings you to my room at this late hour? It's a bit late to be tucking people in.
Extra blankets, I say with my best cheerful smile, just in case the temperature drops overnight. Can't have you all freezing to death on my watch.
I'll tell you a secret.
Topher leans in, confidentially, his robe gaping to show a smattering of dark blonde chest hair.
The best survival kit is a naked woman.
Oh, FFS. I can feel my smile thin. Well, I'm afraid the service doesn't extend to that.
I've already got that part sorted,
he says, but he reaches for the blankets I'm holding out, swaying slightly as he does. I'm about to turn and leave when he says, out of the blue,
don't I know you?
I don't think so, I say firmly.
No, I do. I've seen you somewhere before. Did you waitress in London before you came here?
Sadly, no.
I do, he persists. I know you. I've thought it since I first came here.
Mate, she said she doesn't know you.
And you're pissed. Danny breaks in, pushing past my shoulder to stand in front of me.
Topher steps forward too, his expression turning ugly in less time than it takes for me to think, oh shit.
Danny bunches his fists, the tendons in his neck standing out like cords, and for a minute the two men just stand there, chest to chest.
I feel my heart thudding.
Danny cannot hit Topher. He will get fired.
But Topher knows when he's on thin ice, and it's he who steps back with a laugh that's just the right side of ingratiating.
My mistake, mate.
And then he closes the door, and Danny and I are left standing, looking at each other, wondering how much longer this can go on before the ice cracks.
Liz. Snoop ID Anon 101. Listening to Offline. Snoop Scribers 1.
When I wake up, it is cold. That is the first thing I notice. It is a sharp contrast to yesterday when I woke with a dry mouth and the feeling of having slept all night in a room a few degrees warmer than my bedroom at home. I reach out and take a sip of the water on my bedside table. It is chilled, as if it has been in the fridge. Under the extra duvets Erin dropped off, I am still relatively comfortable, but I am not looking forward to getting dressed. In the end, I reach out and grab the complimentary toweling robe off the end of the bed, dragging it under the covers with me to warm up before I put it on. I remember doing the same thing in my childhood bedroom when I was growing up, pulling my school uniform under the covers to get dressed. The room was in a badly converted loft, and in winter it was almost like sleeping outdoors. When I woke in the morning and breathed out, there would be a cloud of white hanging in the air. At night, the moisture used to condense on the sloping ceiling and then freeze so that I would wake to little runnels of ice on the wall above me. This is not as bad as that. I am in a luxurious chalet, not a Victorian terrace in Crawley for a start. But as far as temperature goes, it is still painfully chilly. I pick up my phone and peer at the screen. It is 7:19. The battery is down to 15%, but I barely have time to worry about that fact because I am distracted by something. I have a notification. At some point in the night, my phone has managed to connect to the internet. The reception is gone now, the bars greyed out to zero, but that notification is still there, proving that at least for a moment there was a flicker of connection. The second surprise is that it is from Snoop. I never get notifications from Snoop. You only get a notification if you get a new subscriber to your feed, and I never do. Only now I have. At some point in the night, someone snooped me. I'm not even sure how, since I wasn't listening to anything. I had no idea that was possible, although maybe when the Wi-Fi connected, it somehow restarted my stream where I left off just for a minute. The realization gives me an odd feeling. There is no way to know who it was. You can only see who is snooping you in real time. Once they log off, the connection is severed. Only the number remains. Then I dismiss the issue from my mind. In all probability, it was a bot or a server glitch or someone mistyping the idea of someone they actually wanted to follow. Downstairs, the rooms are quiet but considerably warmer, and there's a pile of what I imagine must be yesterday's croissants, keeping warm by the wood burner in the lobby, and two big thermos flasks sitting on the hearth. I pick up a croissant and go through to the living room to warm my hands at the fire while I eat it. I assume I am alone. But then something catches my eye, and I turn to see Elliot, seated in an armchair, bent over his laptop. The sight surprises me for two reasons. One, his laptop is on and seems to be plugged in. And two, Elliot almost never comes out of his room except for meals. In fact, when I was working at Snoop, he didn't even leave his office for those. He got whoever was doing work experience to bring him takeout. The same thing, every day. Black coffee and 3 Pret cheese and bacon croissants. It must have been very inconvenient when they stopped serving croissants all day and moved them to the breakfast menu. I find myself wondering what he did. Changed his lunch? Somehow I can't imagine that. Maybe he started sending the work experience person out at 10 a.m. I don't normally talk to Elliot. He is very hard to make conversation with, though perhaps that is not my fault. Ava once told me that he divides women into ones he would like to sleep with and ones that are not of interest to him. I am definitely in the latter category. But now I pluck up my courage. Hi, Elliot.
Hello, Liz.
He says it flatly, but I know him well enough to know that's not a measure of his enthusiasm. He greets everyone like that, even Topher, who is probably his favourite human being out of anyone. How come your laptop is working?
I always carry a battery pack.
He holds it up, a chunky thing the size of a brick that is plugged into the power port of his computer.
Of course, how like Elliot to leave nothing to chance.
But you've got no internet, right?
No.
He agrees.
But I don't need it for coding.
What are you working on?
The GeoSnoop update.
His normally pale face flushes with excitement a little bit, and he launches off into a long explanation I don't completely follow about geo-tracking, ad partners, information storage, GDPR, and the technical challenges of making all those elements work with the law and the existing Snoop interface. I nod along, feigning more interest than I really feel. The only thing I really care about is the fact that he used this technology to find Ava. Somehow that seems unbearably poignant. That her own app may be what leads search and rescue to her body. I see, I say at last, as Elliot grinds to a halt. It sounds very exciting. I try to make my voice sound convincing, but Elliot doesn't really seem to care. It's not like he ever shows much expression of his own feelings.
Now, if you don't mind, I need to work,
he says abruptly, with the directness that is so disconcerting. Sorry, I say. I thought maybe you came down to chat.
I came down because it's too cold to type in my room,
he says, and then he puts his headphones on, and his fingers begin to clatter across the keyboard once more. I should be offended. I feel like I ought to be, but I'm not. He may be direct to the point of rudeness, but right now there is something reassuring about that. With Elliot, there are no secret codes to unravel, no hidden meanings, no weight of expectation. If he wants you to know something, he says it. If he wants something to happen, he tells you. Just at the moment, there is something comforting about it, in contrast to the smoke and mirror world of Topher and Ava, where you never know quite where you stand. Sometimes, back in the early days at Snoop, they would remind me of my parents, and the way it would all be sweetness and light in front of the visitors, and then screaming and threats when the company had left. At least when Elliot says, "Have you got a problem with that?" you know he genuinely wants an answer. When my father said it, there was only one answer you were allowed to give. No, Daddy. And then get out of the way as fast as possible,
before the blow landed. I'm nibbling on the edge of the croissant, staring into the flames of the wood burner, when a noise behind me makes me jump. The croissant falls to the floor in a shower of crumbs. I pick it up. Then I turn to see Rick and Miranda coming into the room. Rick looks like he hasn't slept.
How are you?
He says to me abruptly as he sits beside me. I'm taken aback, not sure what to answer. It's the perfect illustration of the difference between Rick and Elliot. If Elliot were asking, I would know what he meant. Only Elliot would likely never ask because he would understand the impossibility of the question. But when Rick asks, it becomes a puzzle to decode. What does he mean? Does he want to know how I feel about Ava's death? How can I sum that up in a simple answer? Or is he just asking in the meaningless way that people do, only wanting the answer, fine? I'm okay, I say cautiously. Considering.
Really?
Rick looks at me surprised.
You're a bigger person than me.
He glances across at Elliot and then lowers his voice, though Elliot is still wearing his big noise-cancelling headphones and I doubt he can hear a thing.
Having that kind of money dangled under your nose and then snatched away?
Suddenly the real meaning of his question is clear. He wants to talk about Topher, about what this shift in power means for the buyout. I hadn't really thought about it, I say, and it's the truth. In a way, I would be lying if I claimed I hadn't wondered what would happen now Topher controls the company. But somehow, the money never felt that real to me. I never felt like I'd earned it. It doesn't feel like I had anything taken away, just like I had a strange dream and then woke up to reality. Only this, the avalanche, Ava's death, this doesn't feel like reality either. More like waking from a dream to find yourself in an equally surreal nightmare.
But hadn't you made plans? Banked on the money?
Not really, I say slowly. To be honest, I hadn't really come to terms with the idea that it was going to happen anyway.
Jesus,
Rick says. He looks annoyed. I feel like I've said the wrong thing, but I don't know how. I feel a sense of panic begin. It is the same sense I always got with my father, that I would do or say the wrong thing, that he would take it out on my mother.
Could you cut the Mother Teresa Act, Liz? We've lost everything. Don't you get that?
We haven't lost everything, though, surely. I mean, we've still got the shares.
The shares?
Rick gives a short, barking laugh.
Liz, did you listen to the P&L figures I gave out yesterday? We'll be lucky if Snoop makes it to the year end at the rate Topher's going. And without Ava to reassure investors, that's only going to get worse.
But the update, I say, although I know I am scrabbling for reassurance now. Elliot's geo-snooping thing, isn't the whole point of that to make Snoop more profitable?
From a revenue point of view, we've already got that information. We've had it since the permissions changed last year. How Elliot integrates it into the app may make a difference to the user experience, but user satisfaction has never been our problem. The issue has always been monetizing that. From an investor perspective, rolling out the GeoSnoop update won't make a difference. All the added value is already there. And anyway,
he glances over his shoulder at Elliot, who is still typing away.
I've got concerns about that update.
I don't think people realise how much information Snoop is gathering on them. I think when this update makes the level of tracking visible, we might have a backlash on our hands.
One of Snoop's USPs has always been its light touch, Miranda says, coming in from the lobby with a cup of coffee in her hand. She takes a sip and makes a face. I think it is the taste of the coffee that she is reacting to, though it could be the prospect of the update. People like the fact that you can be as anonymous as you want. It's part of what keeps celebrities coming back. I'm not sure how many people clocked the change in permissions and really realised what it meant, because nothing changed at the user end. But this update is going to make it very obvious. Users will see exactly how much Snoop knows about their movements. I told Topher and Elliot at the time that there was a big PR risk with all of this, but they're both so focused on the cool, techie side of it. She stops and glances again at Elliot. He is still head down, tapping away with his earphones on. Anyway, never mind. This probably isn't the time or place to have this discussion. It's too soon. She sits beside me and Rick and takes another sip of coffee, then puts the cup aside. How are you? She says to me. I can hardly prevent myself from rolling my eyes. It seems like everyone is asking that question when what they really want to know is, what are you thinking? I am saved from answering by Elliot, who stands unexpectedly, clicking his laptop closed and pulling off his headphones. He looks tense, which is unusual. He doesn't show emotion easily.
Okay, Elliot,
Miranda says brightly. I can tell she is wondering how much Elliot heard of our conversation.
Erin's put out coffee in the lobby if you want it, she adds,
but he ignores the remark.
Do you know where Toph is? I need to speak to him.
He's still in his room, I think,
Rick says. He is frowning. I can imagine him running over our conversation in his head, trying to work out if he said anything incriminating, and what Elliot might be about to pass back to Topher.
But wait,
he adds, as Elliot heads purposefully towards the stairs.
I wouldn't go up there. I think he's got company.
But it is too late. Either Elliot didn't hear, or he doesn't care. He doesn't reply to Rick's warning. The last we hear of him is his heavy footsteps thumping up the spiral staircase towards the bedrooms.
Erin. Snoop ID, Little Mai. Listening to Offline. Snoop Scribers, 10.
Oh, hey, Erin.
I'm putting out another thermos of coffee when Annie trails into the dining room smiling. She looks like she's not slept a lot.
I hope you know what you're doing, I want to tell her, but I don't.
Morning, Annie. Can I get you coffee? The espresso machine isn't working, but Danny's managed to rig up a kettle on the wood burner, so we've got hot French press.
Oh, yes, please, Annie says. Could you take a cup up to Topher?
Sure.
Oh, I mean, unless... How's your ankle?
She adds, flustered at having slipped so easily back into guest and server mode.
I can take it up if you're not...
She stops. Everyone has been thrown off kilter by the strangeness of our setup here.
Are we fellow survivors or still holiday makers and staff? I don't know myself, but I do know that it's going to be easier for everyone if we stick to the normal protocols. Someone needs to be in charge, and to be perfectly honest, I'd prefer it if that someone were me, not Topher. It's loads better, thanks.
I lie.
I can manage the stairs, no problem.
But you shouldn't have to,
Annie says, making up her mind.
I'll take it up.
Are you sure?
Yes, totally. I'll take one for Elliot too. He must be freezing up there.
She pours out 3 cupfuls and carries them carefully up the spiral staircase to the bedrooms. By 10 a.m, everyone is awake, and Danny and I make the decision to summon all the guests into the lobby for a meeting. There's no real news, and the weather is still too unpredictable for a helicopter to land on our narrow slice of mountainside, but local radio reports have been saying that search and rescue for casualties is ongoing and that EDF are working on restoring power to outlying hamlets. We are not the only people trapped without electricity, by the sound of it. In fact, we're considerably better off than some. But it feels like a good idea to reassure everyone that progress is being made and to stress that we have enough food and water to see us through until they either restore the funicular or get a helicopter up to airlift us out. We also have to discuss the elephant in the room, Ava's death. Although the rumour has gone around the group and everyone seems to have learned of Elliot's conclusions, neither Danny nor I have formally acknowledged the issue. I've been putting it off, unable to face the reality of what has happened. But the time has come that we really have to make an announcement, make it clear that we're trying our best to contact the authorities and alert them to what's happened, but at the same time, put to rest any false hopes, dispel any fantasies that she's going to come limping over the horizon at any moment. Danny beats the gong in the lobby, sending its deafening crescendo ringing around the rafters, and when at last everyone is gathered, I tap a spoon against a coffee cup and wait for silence. Hi, everyone. Sorry for dragging you out of your rooms like this, but Danny and I just wanted to give you an update into our situation. Danny spent the morning trekking out to our 2 closest chalets, which unfortunately, or perhaps fortunately for the inhabitants, seem to be unoccupied. One is very badly damaged, but it doesn't look like anyone was there at the time of the avalanche. The other one was out of the path of the fall, so is fine, but again, there's no one home. We were hoping to find someone with a 2-way radio or a satellite phone, but it's not looking good so far. There's one more chalet up at this level, but it's about 3 miles away, so Danny's going to wait until the weather clears before he heads out to check on that one.
And have you managed to make contact with search and rescue?
Rick says. Yes and no, I say. As you know, Inigo made contact yesterday and told them about our situation, but we haven't been able to get through since, and without access to a satellite phone, I don't think that's going to happen until the power is restored. The power cut seems to have wiped out the remaining cell phone reception. But the key thing is that they do know we're here. We know from what Inigo said that we're on their list. We just have to be patient while they work through the more critical rescues.
Do they know about Ava, though?
The question comes from Tiger, her voice even more husky than usual, as if she is holding back a strong emotion, and a silence falls over the room as I try to answer it. Inigo told them that she's missing, yes, but they don't know the latest. However, I stop and swallow. I knew this would be hard, but this is ridiculously hard. I see Liz's eyes, luminous with distress, reflecting back at me from the other side of the room. Topher's anguished face. Annie shading her eyes with a hand to hide the sudden tears that Tiger's question has provoked. I take a breath, steady myself on the arm of a chair, trying to take the weight off my ankle, give myself space to find the right words. What I want to try to tell them is that even if we can get Elliot's information to the search and rescue team, it's not going to help. Ava's already dead. And now she's probably under thousands of tons of snow as well. There is no chance of anyone rescuing her alive. In fact, there's not even any certainty that they will be able to recover her body. Some of the high passes never melt, even in summer. If Ava is buried at the bottom of one of the steep ravines, well, that's it. There aren't enough resources and money in the world to make that recovery. The position she's in... I stop, swallow again, but before I can find words to go on, Carl is interrupting.
How do we know she's definitely there, though?
His expression is truculent.
I mean, this whole place has shit phone reception. How can Elliot say those coordinates are right?
I look around for Elliot. Where is he? My understanding is that GPS doesn't rely on phone reception. I fumble, still desperately scanning the room for his face, willing him to step in and explain the technicalities of how Snoop gets its geolocation information. I am way out of my depth here. I mean, obviously, you have to relay the positioning. You can't do that without some kind of information exchange. But the GPS coordinates themselves don't rely on mobile towers for accuracy. They're satellite, I think. Is that right, Elliot?
But I can't see him.
Where is Elliot? Other people are looking around now, asking themselves the same question.
He was up in his room when I last saw him, Annie says, frowning. He was working on something. He's probably got his headphones on, didn't hear the gong. I'll go and get him.
She turns and runs lightly up the spiral staircase, and we hear her footsteps receding down the corridor towards Elliot's room and the rat-a-tat on his door. No answer. She knocks again, more loudly, and then calls, Elliot! Through the wood. There is a pause. I imagine her cautiously opening the door, venturing forward to tap Elliot on the shoulder. But my mental picture is broken into shards by a scream. And not just a little shriek of surprise either. This is a full-throated panic cry. With my injured ankle, I'm not first up the stairs. Topher, Rick, Danny and Miranda are ahead of me, and Liz and Carl both jostle past me halfway up. By the time I reach the first floor, I can hear Annie's sobbing cries of, Oh God, he's dead, he's dead, and Topher's brusque, impatient, Stop being hysterical.
When I finally make it to the end of the corridor and push my way into Elliot's room, everything looks completely normal except for two things. Elliot is lying slumped across the little desk by the window. He is face down in a pool of black coffee spilled from a cup tipped on its side. Next to his desk, on a towel on the floor, is his computer, and it has been smashed to pieces.
Liz, Snoop ID Anon 101, listening to Offline, Snoop Scribers 1.
Elliot is dead. You can tell that without even touching him. There is something about the unnatural way he is slumped, one arm hanging limp, the spilled coffee pooling around his face and in his eyes. But it is not only that. It is what has happened to his computer that makes it clear. Elliot would have died before he let anyone touch that computer. It has been... wrecked doesn't seem the right word. It has been obliterated. The keyboard has been ripped off, revealing the inner workings of the device. The screen has cracked and a dark stain is spreading across the LCD. And finally, the hard drive has been pulled out, cracked open and bent and twisted beyond all recognition.
What?
Topher's face is white and stark. He looks more frightened than I have ever seen him.
What's happened? Oh, my God. Oh, God. Oh, Jesus. You wanted to tell me something and I didn't... I wouldn't let... Oh, God.
He stumbles from the room. He looks like he might be sick. Annie appears struck completely dumb by the discovery. She simply stands there, gaping, tears streaming silently down her face, until Tiger takes her arm and leads her away. It is Erin who speaks.
Everyone, out. What?
Carl says it stupidly. He looks like a boxer who has taken too many blows to the head.
Out. Out of the room. This is a crime scene.
She goes across to Elliot, puts two fingers to his neck, pulls Elliot's eyelids back, and then shakes her head very slightly at Danny.
Well, what are you waiting for?
Danny says to the rest of the room. He sounds almost angry.
Didn't you hear what she said? Get out!
We file out. Erin takes a staff key from out of her pocket and locks the door behind us. Her face is outwardly calm, but I think underneath it she is holding down panic.
Inigo,
she says.
I know I don't need to tell you this, but please keep checking for reception with your phone. It's absolutely imperative that we get hold of the police now. Yes, of course.
Inigo looks as stunned as Carl.
I'll go now and check. I left it downstairs.
What can we do? Miranda says blankly to Erin. What can we do?
Nothing,
Erin says. Her face is grim now.
There is nothing we can do. Try to keep it together until the search and rescue come.
Erin. Snoop ID Little Mai. Listening to Offline. Snoop Scribers 10. In the kitchen, Danny stands with his back to the door as if his weight can shut out the reality of what we left behind us, and he stares at me with an expression of horror.
Fuck,
he says, and I can't think of anything to say in reply. Because what else is there to say? This is bad. This is beyond bad. And I can't make sense of it.
Danny, what the hell is going on? I have no fucking clue, mate. Did he commit suicide?
Maybe. I realise how little we know about these people, any of them. After all, Elliot could have been under any kind of pressure, and Danny and I would never have known. But that's the thing. We don't know. We have no idea what is happening here. I put my hands to my head as if I can forcibly keep it together with the pressure of flesh on bone. Oh, God, it feels like everything is falling apart.
He wasn't hurt, I say, trying to figure it out as I speak. I mean, I couldn't see any physical injuries. It didn't look like anyone had attacked him, which means I suppose he must have taken something. Don't you think?
Drugs, injectables, pills?
I don't know.
Holy fuck! Danny, what do we do? The reality, if you can call it that, of our predicament is sinking in. We are stuck here. Very stuck in my case, with my wrenched ankle, in a chalet with a group of people we barely know, and two of them have died in the last 24 hours. Ava's death was a tragic accident. One of those horrible,
awful lightning strikes that can occur in even the most tranquil places. But Elliot? Surely there is no way his death can be anything but murder or suicide. A brain aneurysm, a massive stroke, a heart attack, any of those might kill near enough instantly, but they don't explain the smashed-up computer.
Was he definitely dead?
Danny asks. Definitely. I can't suppress a shudder as I think of it.
Are you sure?
Danny is grasping at straws, and I think he knows it, but he can't stop himself asking,
Are you absolutely certain, mate?
Danny, I may have dropped out of med school without a degree, but I've seen enough dead bodies to know one. I promise you, he was dead. Dilated pupils, absent pulse, the works. I don't mention the puddle of piss under the chair. Danny doesn't need to know about that.
But how?
Danny says. He looks like he might be sick.
How the fuck did someone get to him, if that's what happened? Something in the coffee?
Maybe, I don't know.
Should we go and, you know, check?
I don't know, I say again, more forcefully this time. My head is spinning, trying to figure out the right course of action. The police will want to... I mean, we shouldn't disturb the scene... But maybe if we knew what it was, I look down at the key in my hand and make up my mind. We'll go and check. We won't touch anything. We'll just look. Danny nods, and together we make our way quietly up the service stairs to the first floor, trying not to let the others see where we're heading. We don't discuss our decision to stick together, but I know we are both thinking the same thing. If Elliot didn't commit suicide, then someone in this group is a murderer. And that is a very scary idea indeed. Could one of those sleek, moneyed hipsters downstairs really have murdered someone? I try to imagine gentle Tiger with her slim hands around Elliot's neck. Or... Topher whacking him with an empty bottle of whiskey, and I feel suddenly sick. The staff key grates in Elliot's locked door and then turns, and Danny and I tiptoe inside the room. It is very cold, and it smells of spilled coffee and something else more acrid. That stench of urine, which I recognise from my hospital days. Danny hangs back by the door as if he can't bring himself to come any closer to Elliot's body. So it's clearly up to me. I swallow. Very, very cautiously, trying not to disturb anything, I move forward towards the desk. Elliot is still lying in the same slumped, unnatural position, his face in the puddle of cold black coffee. I already moved him slightly to check for signs of life, but I want to avoid disturbing the scene any further. So without touching him or anything else, I lean over and try to peer inside the empty fallen cup. It's difficult without moving it. The angle is all wrong. I go round to the other side of the desk, and suddenly, there, I can see it. Shit. Danny was right. There's something in the cup, I tell Danny, who is not coming any closer than he can help. Something white.
Sugar?
No, definitely not. It's chalky. Fuck! I straighten up, and Danny and I look at each other, trying to figure out what this means. His black eyes are very, very worried.
I think this rules out suicide,
I say with immense reluctance. I am keeping my voice low. I don't want anyone but Danny to know I'm in here.
Do you think?
Danny looks like he is desperate for an alternative. I can't blame him.
What if he was really bad at taking pills?
Don't you think someone might crush them?
I shake my head.
You didn't see him eating, Danny.
I think of Elliot at dinner, spooning down his venison with concentrated ferocity, swallowing great gulps of it while barely chewing.
But it's not just the pills. Look at the computer.
What do you mean? He could have smashed it up himself, couldn't he?
I shake my head, pointing to the wreckage strewn across one of the chalet's thick, fluffy white bath towels. Someone wrapped it in a towel before they destroyed it, which means they didn't want to be heard. If it was Elliot smashing up his own laptop in a fit of frustration, he wouldn't have bothered to keep the noise down. And if he was trying to cover something up covertly, he'd just have reformatted the hard drive. Why take the risk of smashing it up if you can just rewrite all the data? No. This was done by someone who couldn't log in. Someone who couldn't afford to be overheard.
We both stand, contemplating the smashed screen and broken pieces of hard drive.
Danny doesn't say anything. I'm not sure there is anything he can say.
Then something else occurs to me. Were they his pills, do you think? Did he take any medication?
We'll have to ask the others.
Danny looks like he's relishing the prospect about as much as a slug enema.
Jesus, how do we have that conversation?
How do we discuss any of this?
Hey, guys, listen, there's a strong chance one of your colleagues is a murderer. But why? Why would anyone want to kill Elliot? His shares? His support for Topher? With Ava dead, is it possible someone is trying to undermine Topher's support? None of that would explain the destruction of Elliot's computer, though. It is the computer that I keep coming back to. That vicious, efficient, stealthy act of destruction. That could not have been an accident, and I don't for a second believe it was Elliot. There is only one plausible reason for this action: to hide something on the computer itself. Something Elliot knew. Something that got him killed.
I think of Topher's anguished wail when we found Elliot's body. Oh God, oh Jesus, he wanted to tell me something. I swallow. Danny, what if Ava's death wasn't an accident?
Liz. Snoop ID, Anon 101. Listening to, offline. Snoop Scribers, 1.
We sit, all of us, huddled around the wood burner in the living room. Except, it is not all of us. That is the problem. Now we are 10. Now we are 9. Now we are 8. The words chant inside my head, a kind of gruesome countdown, edging closer to 0, 1 by 1.
Suddenly I think I might vomit.
Was it? Tiger speaks. Her voice is cracked and rough as if she has been crying.
Was it suicide?
No!
Topher's answer comes as quick as a gunshot. He stands up. He begins to pace.
Fuck no. Elliot? Never. So what?
Rick stands up too, squaring up to Topher as if he is about to punch him.
What are you saying?
Topher looks at him. I think he genuinely does not understand Rick's question.
Use your head, Toph. If it's not suicide...
Rick's voice has an edge I've never heard before. He sounds dangerous.
Then it's murder,
Is that what you're saying, Topher? Is it?
Topher's mouth falls open. Then he sits abruptly. He looks winded, almost as if Rick really had punched him.
God. You're right. Oh, my God.
His face is ashen.
Elliot!
He says brokenly. And then he begins to cry. It is awful watching him. None of us knows what to do. Rick looks at Miranda, whose face is aghast. Carl puts his hands up in a don't look at me, mate, gesture of repudiation. Inigo's expression is pure panic. It is Tiger who steps up. She goes to sit beside Topher. She puts her hand on his arm.
Topher,